Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Dena Bhutale Sayam Upakadamayam Dadati Sapandantika. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, towards the end of the ninth chapter, entitled The Appearance of the Demon Vritrasura. This Vritrasura was a very interesting asura, or demon, because although he was an asura, he was actually a great devotee. In the succeeding chapters, beginning in chapter 14, how the story of Vritrasura, how a devotee became Vritrasura, will be told. But for now, we've just heard of the appearance of Vritrasura. Vritrasura's appearance was also very interesting, because his father's name was Tosta, practically a demigod, and at least asura. And Tvasta's son was a great, powerful brahmana named Visharup. Visharup became the priest of the demigods when they were in need. And by his power, the demigods were in great difficulty because Indra had insulted Brihaspati, his spiritual master. The demigods were in such difficulty. But due to Vishwarup's taking over the position as priest, they were able to defeat the demigods. Excuse me, they were able to defeat the demons. And unfortunately, when Indra found out something, that Vishwarup, while performing the sacrifices on behalf of the demigods, was simultaneously offering oblations to the demons, because his mother was from that side, from the Diti side. So Indra became furious and he cut off the three heads of Vishwarup. As a result of that, Vishwarup's father, Tvasta, performed the sacrifice, and from that sacrifice, this very, very powerful demon named Vritrasura came. He was formed, and he was specifically coming to kill Indra, to be Indra's enemy. But due to a quirk in the way that Tvasta performed the sacrifice, instead of this demon having Indra as his enemy, Indra had this demon as his enemy. So this demon was a great devotee, and how that will be manifest we'll speak of later. But in any case, he was so powerful. Practically, he could annihilate the universe, practically speaking. Indra became terrified, as did the other demigods, and they went and they decided to pray to the Lord to protect them, because always, yada yada hidamasya glanir bhavati bharata abhutanam Sri Jamyaham, that the Lord always comes when there is a decline in religiosity, and he always comes to protect his devotees. So the demigods, being empowered servants of the Lord, they went to the Lord to beg him through their prayers to incarnate. So we've been hearing those prayers for the last days, and they've been glorifying the Lord and his position and explaining the Lord's incredible power and how he's the super soul, and by his mercy one gets intelligence, or one becomes full of fear, or one becomes fearless. The demigods describe how it is the Lord who is the basic principle of material existence. And And without his being the maintainer, Vishtabhyahamidam Kritsnam Ikam Sena Stito Jagat, without his maintaining the universe, then there would be nothing in existence. Everything is resting upon the Supreme Lord. We look at the world and we look at ourselves even as if we had some type of independent existence from God. But actually we are completely dependent upon Him. We are resting upon Him. Our existence rests upon His existence. We are not independent. We cannot be independent. So by expressing the powerful and wonderful glories of the Lord, the demigods were showing their understanding of His position and their full dependence upon Him. And in text 39, which is the verse we're up to today, he describes the results of knowing. Indra, or the demigods, describe the results of actually knowing. To know means to act on the principle. That's true knowing, not just theoretical knowing. Not, as Prabhupada would say, armchair speculation about what the truth is. What is armchair speculation? It means that people sitting around in their chairs and just philosophizing about what God is, what the truth is, but never actually acting upon it. Just, it hovers somewhere on the mental platform. So that type of armchair speculation, that's not practical, that never manifests in any action or anything real or tangible, is not what the demigods were talking about. That is not real knowing. And what is the result of actual knowing? They explain in text 39. O killer, therefore, O killer of the Madhu demon, incessant transcendental bliss. What does incessant mean? Continuously flowing. Incessant transcendental bliss flows in the minds of those who have even once tasted but a drop of the nectar of the ocean of your glories. If one just understands even once, one drop of the nectar, of the sweet nectar of the glories of Krishna. Such an exalted, so bliss flows through the mind of such a person. Such an exalted devotee, devotees forget the tiny reflection of so-called material happiness produced from the material senses of sight and sound. So the material world, that which everyone is so attracted to, the enjoyments of pleasures in the material world, are in their correct perspective as insignificant, like a shadow, compared to the actual object. How much pleasure can we get from the shadow of food, as opposed to how much pleasure can we get from the food itself? So the material world is compared to a shadow. So immediately, if one tastes the happiness of the glories of the Lord, of expressing the glory, even a drop of the happiness, then the material world is seen in its right perspective, because the substance actually is tasted. Free from all desires, such devotees are the real friends of all living entities. Free from such desires means that they are free from all material desires. Why are they free from all material desires? Because they have experienced the actual capacity of the material world to deliver pleasure. It promises so much, but what it actually delivers is so little. While on the other hand, the spiritual world and spiritual pleasures deliver something completely different, of a different quality. So therefore, they are free from material desires because of their param drishtvanavartite. They're experiencing a higher taste. And such devotees are the real friends of all living entities, because they have the desire and the capacity to truly help others. Offering their minds unto you, their minds are filled with the glories of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna. The Sanskrit of that is Mahimamrita. The glorious nectar-like qualities of the Mahima, of the greatness of the Lord. So offering their minds into you, filling their minds with those glories and enjoying transcendental bliss, they are expert in achieving the real goal of life. So they've tasted the glories, their mind are full of those glories, they're experiencing them as if nectar of a different quality than the material world. And they help others. They have no material desires, they don't exploit others, they just simply help others. And they achieve the actual goal of their life, which is to prema pamartamahan, to develop love for Krishna. O Lord, you are the sole and dear friend of such devotees who never need, the soul means the life of such devotees. What gives us our life, our energy? What for a devotee it is Krishna, for a materialist it's power or some type of enjoyment or another, some sensual enjoyment or another. So the desire to serve Krishna gives him life. O Lord, you are the sole and dear friend of such devotees who never need return to this material world. How could they give up engagement in your devotional service? Here's Prabhupada's short purport to this verse. Although non-devotees, because of their meager knowledge and speculative habits, cannot understand the real nature of the Lord, a devotee who has once tasted the nectar from the Lord's lotus feet can realize what transcendental pleasure there is in the Lord's devotional service. A devotee knows that simply by rendering service to the Lord, he serves everyone. Therefore, devotees are real friends to all living entities. Only a pure devotee can preach the glories of the Lord for the benefit of all conditioned souls. Why? Because only he has no self-interest. No self-interest meaning no selfish interest. He doesn't want to get anything from either the Lord or those he's preaching to. He wants to describe the sweetness that he experiences for and pour that sweetness upon the parched, desert-like hearts of materialistic persons who are trying desperately again and again to squeeze pleasure from the desert of the shadow of the spiritual world, which is the material world. So he sees that reality as it is, and therefore for Krishna, in Krishna's service, not to gain anything for himself selfishly, he preaches. So only such a person can actually preach the glories of the Lord for the benefit of all conditioned souls. What a wonderful verse. Now, text 40. The verses themselves are prose. They're not the usual poetic verses. They're not verses. Actually, they're just prose. O Lord, the demigods continue. O personified three worlds, father of the three worlds. O strength of the three worlds, in the form of the Vaman incarnation. O three-eyed form of Nrisingadev, O most beautiful person within the three worlds. Everything and everyone, including human beings and even the daitya demons and the danavas, is but an expansion of your energy. Because after all, what is separate from God? The good and the bad are also expanded from Him. If something was outside of the realm of the Lord, then He wouldn't truly be the Lord. He would be the Lord in some areas, but not the Lord in other areas. So everything is under His control. Even the demons, everything is an expansion of His energy. O Supremely Powerful One, You have always appeared. Here comes their request, the demigod's request. O Supremely Powerful One, You have always appeared in Your form as the various incarnations to punish the demons as soon as they became very powerful. You appeared as Lord Vamandev, Lord Ram, and Lord Krishna. Vamandev, to take back the world on behalf of Indra, the universe on behalf of Indra from Bali Maharaj. Lord Ramachandra, to vanquish Ravana and other demons. And Lord Krishna, to when the world was overburdened by demoniac forces, Lord Krishna came. You appear sometimes like an animal, like Lord Boar, to lift up the earth from its, when it had fallen down into the Garbhodak ocean. Sometimes a mixed incarnation like Lord Nisringadev and Lord Hayagriva. And sometimes an aquatic like Lord Fish and Lord Tortoise. Assuming such various forms, You have always punished the demons and Danavas. We therefore pray that Your Lordship appear today as another incarnation, if You so desire to kill the great demon Vritrasura. So they were in so much anxiety about this Vritrasura that they took shelter of the Lord. So it is wonderful that they took shelter of the Lord. Jnana Sukritina Arjuna. They are Sukritinas, extremely pious souls. Artagigyasaratati. They're in distress and they took shelter of the Lord. Begging Him, You please now come and kill this demon Vritrasura who is causing us so much anxiety. Here's Prabhupada's purport. There are two kinds of devotees known as Sakam, with calm desires, and Akam, no desires. Pure devotees are Akam, whereas devotees in the upper planetary system, such as the demigods, are called Sakam, because they still want to enjoy material opulence. Because of their pious activities, the Sakam devotees are promoted to the higher planetary systems. But at heart, they still desire to lord it over the material resources. The Sakam devotees are sometimes disturbed by the demons and Rakshasas, but the Lord is so kind that He always saves them by appearing as an incarnation. The Lord's incarnations are so powerful that Lord Vamandev covered the entire universe with two steps and therefore had no place for His third step. The Lord is called Trivikrama because He showed His strength by delivering the entire universe with merely three steps. The difference between Sakam and Akam devotees, one who has no desires and one who has desires, and the demigods again who are praying to the Lord for protection from Vritrasura, are in the category of Sakam desires, because they are praying to the Lord and glorifying Him, but they want something for themselves. And the Akam devotees, who are the pure devotees, they want nothing for themselves. Their interest is just how to please the Lord. Well, horrible. How are you? Their interest is to just please Him. So Prabhupada is now going to explain the difference between Sakam, devotees with desires, and Akam, devotees. Both are devotees, but are on different levels. Is when Sakam devotees, like the demigods, fall into difficulty, they approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead for relief. Whereas Akam devotees, so the Sakam devotees, they say, "Oh, please help me. Please remove these difficulties. I'm in anxiety, I'm in distress, I have this problem, I have that problem. Please remove my problem so I can be peaceful and happy again." That's Akam devotees, devotees with desires. But that's Sakam devotees, rather. They approach the Lord for relief. Whereas Akam devotees, even in the greatest danger, and just try to imagine not imagine, but conceive of the consciousness of these pure Akam devotees who have no desires. They're devoted fully to Krishna. The desires are all for His pleasure. Even in the greatest danger, they never disturb the Lord for material benefits. Even if an Akam devotee is suffering, he thinks this is due to his past impious activities and agrees to suffer the consequences. This consciousness is incredible. So divested of any selfishness, self-centeredness. He never disturbs the Lord. Sakam devotees immediately pray to the Lord as soon as they are in difficulty. But they are regarded as pious because they consider themselves fully dependent on the mercy of the Lord. So they are wonderful. To take shelter of the Lord in difficulty is wonderful. But to accept the difficulty and not ask anything from the Lord is still more wonderful. That is purity. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8, Lord Brahma says, Tate anukampam susamikshamano bhunjane vatma kritam vapakam vidvag vapurbir vidadan namaste jivatayo muktipade sadayabhak. Even while suffering, in the midst of difficulties, devotees simply offer their prayers and service more enthusiastically. In this way, they become firmly fixed in devotional service and eligible to return home back to Godhead without a doubt. In the second canto, Prabhupada states that this consciousness, this consciousness is the secret of success in Krishna consciousness. Jivatiyo mukti padesa dayabhak. The one who is in this mood in performing devotional service, he inherits the kingdom of God, dayabhak, as the son naturally inherits the property of his father. Because regardless of the consciousness that he, or the circumstances that he is in, his consciousness is always giving to Krishna. That's his only desire. And what is the impetus for that desire? It is that there is love in his heart. That is real love. And this type of pure devotee possesses that type of real love. Even while suffering in the midst of difficulties, devotees simply offer their prayers and service more enthusiastically. In this way, they become firmly fixed in devotional service and eligible to return home back to Godhead without a doubt. Sakam devotees, of course, achieve from the Lord the results they desire from their prayers. But they do not immediately become fit to return to Godhead. They have to become purified. And they will become purified because they've approached the Lord. Yeyitam mam prapadyante. So Krishna gives them their desires, but he does it in such a way that he purifies their hearts as well. So therefore, in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, it says, Akama savakama va mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogeni adjeta purushapara. That whether one is full of desires, or has no material desires, or desires freedom from the material world, one should still worship the Lord with great intensity, because that worship of the Lord, even though if it's not perfect and pure, it will bestow in time the perfection and purity by Krishna's grace. Because when one worships the Lord, it's a living relationship that one is opening with Him. And He cares for His devotees. Not only the most exalted, pure devotees. Of course He cares for them so sweetly and carefully. But He cares for all His devotees. Next verse. So in this verse they glorify the Lord and express their position. We want something from You. We want Your protection. And how do we want it? We want You to incarnate immediately to kill this Vritrasura. O Supreme Protector, O Grandfather, O Supreme Pure, O Lord, we are all surrendered souls at Your lotus feet, because they're servants, the demigods are servants of the Lord. Indeed, our minds are bound to Your lotus feet in meditation by chains of love. Now please manifest Your incarnation. Accept us as Your own eternal servants and devotees. Be pleased with us and sympathetic towards us. By Your love-filled glance with its cool and pleasing smile of sympathy, and by the sweet nectarian words emanating from Your beautiful face, free us from the anxiety caused by this Vritrasura who always pains the cores of our hearts. O Lord, as the small sparks of a fire cannot possibly perform the actions of the whole fire, we sparks of Your Lordship cannot inform You of the necessities of our life. You are the complete whole, therefore of what do we need to inform You? In other words, everything that they could be telling the Lord, help me for this reason, I have this problem, and that problem, He already knows. He's omniscient. He knows everything. He is the Kshetragya, the knower of all fields. We only know our own body. He knows everyone's body. And also, no living entity is separate from Him. We're all His part. We have a living relationship with Him. And He's aware of everything that goes on because we're His part and parcel. So what need do we have to inform You of anything? You already know all this. You know everything because you are the original cause of the cosmic manifestation. So how powerful is He? The maintainer and annihilator of the entire universal creation. You always engage in Your pastimes with Your spiritual and material energies, for You are the controller of all these varied energies. You exist within all living entities. So, in every living entity, sarvasya chaham riddhe sanavisto, Krishna is in everyone's heart. He's also the Parameshwara, the Supreme Controller. He's the Annihilator. It's actually Krishna who creates and destroys and maintains the material world, although He does it through Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. It is actually the Lord who does this. You exist internally as Parabrahman and externally as the ingredients of the material creation. You are this too. This is Your energy. Bhumira ponalo vayu kammano buddha evacha hankara ityame. Everything. There is nothing that is separate from Krishna. Everything is Krishna's energy. But Krishna Himself exists in the spiritual world. Goloka Vrindavan Vaikuntha. So you are the ingredients of the material creation. That's called the Upadankara. Therefore, although manifested in various stages, at different times and places, and in various bodies, so you have different ways of manifesting yourself, but you're everything. So what need do we have? You have gifted us the consciousness that we have, so You know everything. So what need in one level, on one sense, do we have to explain all these things to You? But please come. You, the personality of Godhead, are the original cause of all causes. Indeed, You are the original element. You are the witness of all activities. Upadrashtanamantacha. You are the overseer of everything and the witness. But because you are as great as the sky, you are never touched by any of them. You are the witness of everything as Parabrahman and Paramatma, all the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nothing is unknown to you. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. A pure devotee is aware that since nothing is unknown to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he need not be informed of the devotee's inconveniences and conveniences. A pure devotee knows that there is no need to ask the Absolute Truth for material necessities. Therefore, while informing the Supreme Lord about their distress in being attacked by Vichasura, the demigods apologize for offering prayers for their safety. A neophyte devotee, of course, approaches the Supreme Lord for relief from distress or poverty, or for speculative knowledge of the Lord. Bhagavad Gita 7.16 mentions four kinds of pious men who begin devotional service to the Lord. One who is distressed, artha; one who is in need of money, artarti; and one who is inquisitive, gigyasu; and one who is searching for the Absolute Truth, the jnani. A pure devotee, however, knows that since the Lord is omnipresent and omniscient, there is no need to offer prayers or worship Him for one's personal benefit. A pure devotee always engages in the service of the Lord without demanding anything. The Lord is present everywhere and knows the necessities of His devotees. Consequently, there is no need to disturb Him by asking Him for material benefits. Next verse. So you know everything, including our need. Therefore, dear Lord, you're omniscient, and therefore you know very well why we have taken shelter at your lotus feet, which provides shade that gives relief from all material disturbances. Since you are the Supreme Spiritual Master and you know everything, we have sought shelter at your lotus feet for instruction. Please give us relief by counteracting our present distress. Your lotus feet are the only shelter for a fully surrendered soul, for a fully surrendered devotee, and are the only means for subduing all the tribulations of this material world. So, even though we might not be on the perfect level that's being referred to here as an akam devotee, yet we should seek the shelter of the Lord, the shade of the Lord's lotus feet. Prabhupada's purport. One need only seek shelter of the shade of the Lord's lotus feet. Then all the material tribulations that disturb him will be subdued, just as when one comes under the shade of a big tree, the disturbances caused by the heat of the scorching sun are immediately mitigated without one's asking for relief. So relief from material difficulties comes automatically if we actually attain the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. And what's the example Prabhupada gives? Just like when it's very hot and we go underneath a big tree. If we just get the shelter of the tree, automatically, without a separate endeavor, the heat problem that we're experiencing as we moved. Therefore, the whole concern of the conditioned soul should be the lotus feet of the Lord. The conditioned soul suffering from various tribulations because of existing in this material world can be relieved only when he seeks shelter at the Lord's lotus feet. Text 44. Therefore, O Lord, O Supreme Controller, O Lord Krishna, please annihilate this dangerous demon Vritrasura, Tvasta's son, who has already swallowed all our weapons, our paraphernalia for fighting, and our strength and influence. So they're in so much anxiety. Prabhupada's, halfway through Prabhupada's purport. The four classes of neophyte devotees who approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead to offer devotional service because of material motives are not pure devotees. But the advantage for such materialistic devotees is that they sometimes give up their material desires and become pure. When the demigods are utterly helpless, they approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead in grief and with tears in their eyes, praying to the Lord, and thus they become almost pure devotees, free from material desires. Admitting that they have forgotten pure devotional service because of extensive material opportunities, they fully surrender to the Lord, leaving to His consideration whether to maintain them or annihilate them. Such surrender is necessary. Bhaktivinod Thakur sings, Mirabai Rakibai Yo Icha Tohar. O Lord, I fully surrender unto your lotus feet as you desire. You may protect me or annihilate me. You have the full right to do either. So this is such surrender. This is necessary, Prabhupada says. If one wants to develop love for Krishna, if one wants to free oneself from the material world and develop love for Krishna, this is necessary. If one wants to stay within the material world and develop devotional service gradually, then one prays to the Lord as the demigods are praying to the Lord. But then, even that situation sometimes becomes very intense, like the demigods are praying now, where they're just putting themselves at the Lord's mercy, or like at the time of death. What will one be able to do at the time of death to protect oneself? All of one's own abilities will fall so short, and one will try every one of those abilities, his intelligence, his money, his strength, his influence, and they will all fail, and then one will find oneself helpless. And then one must turn to the Lord if one has proper piety and experience. One turns to the Lord then and says, okay, Krishna, you have me now. As you like, you can do. And even in deep suffering at that time, physical suffering, one oneself doesn't experience the suffering in the same way. There's a distance between the suffering and oneself. And that distance is Krishna's mercy, the calling out to Krishna, and Krishna's presence there. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Maro birakobi yo icha toha. O Lord, I fully surrender unto your lotus feet. Now as you desire, you may protect me or annihilate me. You have the full right to do either. So at the time of death, everyone's going to be in that position when we've lost everything. And we have to put ourselves in Krishna's hands. But will our strength and faith be strong enough to do that at that time? Without full anxiety? Will we trust the shelter of the Lord at that time? If we've practiced in our life, we will. Or at least we can say, as Prabhupada said, what we have practiced in our life will be tested at that time. That's everyone's ultimate test. Whether we have grasped onto things in this life worthy of grasping onto, that will actually give us shelter, or pashanapina pashyati. Dehe patra atmasanyasa satsvapi tisham pramata nidanam pashanapina pashyati. Oh, how we grasped upon fallible soldiers, practice taking shelter of fallible soldiers in our life. So this will be tested, each and every one of us. No one will escape this exam. So we've been practicing in our life, taking shelter of Krishna. This is the necessity. And their final obeisances in the 45th verse. Hamsaya dara nilayaya narikshakaya krishnaya mrsti yashase nirupakramaya satsangrahaya bhavapanta nijashramaptav ante palishta gataye haraye namaste. O Lord, O Supreme Pure, You live within the core of everyone's heart and observe all the desires and activities of the conditioned souls. O Supreme Personality of Godhead known as Lord Krishna, Krishnayam Risti Yashase Narupakramaya. O Supreme Personality of Godhead known as Lord Krishna, Your reputation is bright and illuminating. You have no beginning, for You are the beginning of everything. This is understood by pure devotees because You are easily accessible to the pure and truthful. When the conditioned souls are liberated and sheltered at Your lotus feet after roving throughout the material world for many millions of years, they attain the highest success of life. Therefore, O Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, we offer our respectful obeisances at Your lotus feet. We read just a little bit from Prabhupada's purport. The word mrishtayashase is significant herein because Krishna is always famous for relieving His devotee from danger. A devotee who has sacrificed everything for the service of Krishna and whose only source of relief is the Lord is known as akinchana. As expressed in the prayers offered by Queen Kunti, the Lord is akinchana vita, the property of such a devotee. Akinchana means Tama Kinchana Gochara, in those verses it also says. Kunti Devi says, you are the property of, you become purchased by those who possess, try to possess nothing within the material world, but only wish to possess the shelter of Your lotus feet. They are called Akinchana. So Krishna becomes purchased by such devotees. And one who has taken full shelter of Krishna, Prabhupada explains, Janmaishwarya, or rather Kunti Devi explains, Janmaishwarya, Shukta Shibir, Eidamanas Puna, Nam Eva Yasyati, Abhidattam Tvam, Vai Tvam Akinchana Gochara, that one whose only shelter is Krishna, he can truly call out to You with feeling. Just like when a young child calls out when they're in pain, they call out, they cry when they're in pain, and immediately the parents come and the children cry all the time, but when they're really in distress, they're crying has a particular quality to it. Their calling out has a particular quality to it that invokes something in the heart of the parent, especially the mother, that forces them to immediately come. On the other hand, sometimes they cry and call out just to try to manipulate things. And it's completely different. It has a completely different potency when they're just feeling sorry for themselves or something. So Krishna, when someone possesses nothing in this world and calls out to Krishna, it has a deep potency that pulls on Krishna's heart. And Krishna is the property, akinchana vita, of such a devotee. So that ends the prayers of the demigods. Now the Lord, He replied. Text 46 just explains that. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O King Prickett, when the demigods offered the Lord their sincere prayers in this way, the Lord listened by His causeless mercy. Being pleased, He then replied. There's some verses in this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Sri Bhagavan Vatsa, O beloved demigods, You had offered your prayers to me with great knowledge, and I am certainly most pleased with you. A person is liberated by such knowledge, and thus he remembers my exalted position, which is above the conditions of material life. Such a devotee is fully purified by offering prayers in full knowledge. This is the source of devotional service to me. Interesting. It's saying offering prayers, describing with knowledge the Lord's position as the demigods have done. Even though they're mentioned as sakkam devotees, not pure devotees, but with material desires, still these offering prayers like this are so purifying, and they're the source or the root of bhakti, of devotional service to me, the Lord says. From Prabhupada's purport, about a third of the way down. Impersonalists sometimes show their incomplete knowledge by addressing the Lord as being nameless. They always offer prayers indirectly saying, you are this, you are that, but they do not know to whom they're praying. A devotee, however, always offers personal prayers. A devotee says, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Govinda, unto Krishna. That is the way to offer prayers. If one continues to offer such personal prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is eligible to become a pure devotee and return home back to Godhead. The Lord continues, O best of the intelligent demigods, although it is true that nothing is difficult for one to obtain when I am pleased with him, a pure devotee whose mind is exclusively fixed upon me does not ask me for anything but the opportunity to engage in devotional service. So Prabhupada has already been explaining this in his purports. Here's Prabhupada's purport here. When the demigods finished offering their prayers, they anxiously waited for their enemy, Vritrasura, to be killed. This means that the demigods are not pure devotees. Although without difficulty one can get anything he desires if the Lord is pleased, the demigods aspire for material profit by pleasing the Lord. The Lord wanted the demigods to pray for unalloyed devotional service, but instead they prayed for an opportunity to kill their enemy. This is the difference between a pure devotee and a devotee on the material platform. Indirectly, the Lord regretted that the demigods did not ask for pure devotional service. The Lord continues, those who think material assets to be everything or to be the ultimate goal of life are called kripanas, misers. They do not know the ultimate necessity of the soul. Moreover, if one awards that which is desired by such fools, he must also be considered foolish. So if a person doesn't properly use what he has, the opportunity to beg from the Lord, he's begging from the Lord. So if he doesn't use the opportunity to beg pure devotional service, he's not using what he has, and therefore he's considered a miser. And if someone awards such a person what a foolish person desires, he's also considered foolish. That's the verse. Prabhupada says in his purport, if a kripana, a miser, not knowing his self-interest, foolishly asks for something material, one who awards it to him is also foolish. Krishna, however, is not a foolish person. He is supremely intelligent. If someone comes to Krishna asking for material benefits, Krishna does not award him the material things he desires. Instead, the Lord gives him intelligence so that he will forget his material desires and become attached to the Lord's lotus feet. In such cases, although the kripana offers prayers to Krishna for material things, the Lord takes away whatever material possessions the kripana has and gives him the sense to become a devotee, as stated by the Lord in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 22:39, Ami Vigya, I am intelligent, A Moki, Vishaya Kene Diva, why should I give this fool this sense enjoyment that he wants? Svacharanamrita Di, I will give him on my own lotus feet. Visha Bulava, causing him to forget sense gratification. Prabhupada's translation. Since I'm very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. If one sincerely prays to God for material possessions in exchange for devotional service, the Lord, who is not foolish like such an unintelligent devotee, shows him special favor by taking away whatever material possessions he has and gradually giving him the intelligence to be satisfied only by rendering service to his lotus feet. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments in this regard that if a foolish child requests his mother to give him poison, the mother, being intelligent, will certainly not give him poison, even though he requests it. A materialist does not know that to accept material possessions means to accept poison or the repetition of birth and death. An intelligent person, a brahmana, aspires for liberation from material bondage. That is the real self-interest of a human being. Another way that Prabhupada has explained this is that when Krishna is pleased with someone, he satisfies their material desires. So he does that. But when he is really pleased with someone, he takes everything away and forces him into a situation when he can do nothing but surrender to his lotus feet. And then, even though he's arranged that situation, he praises the devotee and glorifies him and gives him full shelter. So Krishna is so wonderful in that way. Svayam. This next verse has a fairly long purport, even though there's only a few more verses and purports in the chapter. I think we should end here, and if Krishna allows, we'll continue tomorrow and move to the next chapter. Also an amazing chapter. This whole past time is so amazing. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes, go.
Often I meet Christian and they have quite a lot of faith in Jesus. It's very simple faith. Is that enough to have a simple faith like that in Krishna? Or it needs to be a lot deeper?
I think simple faith doesn't have to be necessarily shallow. But how deep one's faith has to be deep, even if it's simple. But one question is, can complicated people have simple faith? Complex people. And in Kali Yuga, it's very hard to be simple-hearted. It is said that sharala, which means simplicity of heart, is a qualification for a devotee, so it's good. But if one has just simple faith and no knowledge, if someone asks him a question, he won't be able to understand it, explain the answer either. So it's for a preacher has to have knowledge, and also realized knowledge is required to answer one's own questions as well that naturally come up. Did you want to say anything else or ask anything more on that? I possibly didn't do the question justice.
Yeah,
simple faith. But what do you do if you're not simple? How do you get simple faith? So simplicity of mind is generally, or lack of sophistication is considered a good thing, but this is such a sophisticated, complicated world. So in this age, it's a blessing. But the real point, or the ultimate point possibly, is the depth of the faith. Can it withstand any circumstance? Because so many paradoxical situations we get thrust into our life. We wonder if Krishna's working there, if he's really there or not in those circumstances. So simple faith, if it's not deep, will get shattered at that time. Prabhupada gave the example in World War I, the simple, faithful German mothers all prayed that their sons returned from the war. They went to the battlefield, and of course the mothers prayed that they would return, but so many of them didn't. So the mothers became atheists. So they had a simple faith, but it wasn't deep enough. It was on the kanista level. And the things that go on the world, on in the world, make you wonder about God and what he's up to. When the Holocaust, many people, they saw what happened to the Holocaust. Millions and millions of people killed, innocent people, children. They wonder, how could God allow this to happen? And it's happening all over the world now. So to have simple faith, sometimes simple faith in the way that we're talking about it is very narrow and it's not deep. And to maintain that simple faith, they have to disparage everyone else's religion and faith, which is very fundamental. Fundamentalist. To make my worship right, everyone else has to be wrong. So I would say that's not deep. It's simple on one level, but it's not deep. Because if someone else might have a truth, that would mean they would question their own truth and faith and it would fall apart. So that is simple on one level maybe, but certainly not ideal and certainly not deep. It causes so much trouble in the world, that mentality. With, you know, one religion fighting and fighting, all the religions fighting each other, saying if you're not on our side, our team, our religion, you know, we're going to kill you. So depth is based on experience, purity. And then one could ask, can one have true faith if one is not pure? And then one can say, can one be pure if one is sinning all the time? So often these people are sinful like anything, committing so many horrible activities, but still they're insisting that our way is the only way and that we have deep faith. Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Whatever faith we do have is tested at death. How could God let me die and suffer like this? Thank you.